Grandma
reads
a story.
You want a story?
Yes.
You want a story, Kelly? Okay, listen. Grandma will probably read you a story, okay? I'm sure she will. But why don't you get the other kids outside, okay? Go outside and see if they want to come inside, and Grandma will read a story, okay? All right, go get them.
Right, left, right.
Kids, come on, get in here, hurry, hustle. We're going to get Grandma to tell us a story. Grandma!
Yes?
The kids want you to come in here and tell a story. You got time?
How about reading a story, not just telling a story?
Read a story, that sounds good.
All right, if everybody's kind of quiet, gather around and I'll read a story.
Fantastic, here we go.
Hi, kids. Love you. We're going to read about Thomas. He was one of the disciples. For some reason or other, Thomas was not present when Jesus appeared among his disciples that Sunday evening. Possibly he had gone on an errand, or he may have been busy getting ready to return to Galilee. Anyway, he was absent. And being absent, he missed being among the first to see Jesus after his resurrection. Just when he heard what had happened while he was away, we do not know. Could have been the same night or the next morning, but whenever it was, his friends were full of the exciting story and very eager to tell him about it. "We have seen the Lord," they said. "He appeared to us. We saw him and talked with him. Now we know for sure that he is risen from the dead." "Nonsense," said Thomas. "You're just like the women, seeing things. I don't believe it." Day after day, he refused to believe their story. Perhaps it was because he felt a bit left out. By this time, he had heard that Jesus had appeared to Mary Magdalene, Peter, and finally to all the disciples in the upper room. Why had he appeared to everybody else and not to him? Could be that a little bit of jealousy had added to his doubts. In any case, he decided that he would not believe unless he himself actually saw Jesus. "Except I shall see in his hands the prints of the nails, and put my fingers into the prints of the nails, and trust my hand into his side, I will not believe." All week long he held doggedly to this idea. Nobody could move him from it. Some have thought it was very wicked of Thomas to doubt so long, but they forget that all the disciples doubted at first. When they heard the stories that the women brought from the open tomb, they called them idle tales. Thomas only doubted a few more days longer than the rest. And Thomas had many good points. He was a very brave man and most devoted to Jesus during his ministry. Now, not seeing Jesus since his crucifixion, he was in doubt. Out of loyalty to his beloved master, he did not want to make a mistake. Could the stories of his resurrection be true? He was not sure. "I'll believe when I see him," he said to himself, "but not before." All that week he worried about it. As the days went by, his doubts increased. If Jesus were alive, as the others said, why did he not appear again? Another Sabbath came, and still no sign of Jesus. Most of the disciples were now sure he was alive somewhere, but where? Only one of the 12 seemed inclined to doubt. "I can't believe he is alive," Thomas said to himself. "I won't believe it, not unless I see the print of the nails in his hand." Saturday passed and Sunday. It was now 10 days since the crucifixion. Then in the evening, as the disciples were all together in the same upper room, came Jesus, the door being shut, and stood in the midst and said, "Peace be unto you." This time, Thomas was there with the rest, and what a look of blank surprise came over his face. He may well have felt ashamed, too, after all his doubting, for surely this was Jesus. There could be no question now. The others had been right all the time. The Lord had indeed risen from the dead. Now Jesus was looking straight at him, right through him. That dear familiar voice was calling him by name. "Thomas," said Jesus, "reach hither thy finger and behold my hands. Reach hither thy hand and thrust it into my side. Be not faithless, but believing." So Jesus had read his thoughts. Jesus had known all about his doubts. Jesus had heard every word he had said about touching the wounds in his hands and his feet and side. He did not want to touch them now. There was no need. Beyond all question, this was the dear master himself. Kneeling humbly at his feet, he cried, "My Lord and my God." Then Jesus said to him, kindly and gently, because thou hast seen me, thou hast believed. Blessed are they that have not seen and yet have believed. At that moment, Jesus was thinking not only of Thomas, but of many other people. All the people who should live from that day to this. He was thinking of all the boys and the girls who would hear of him through the years to come, who would believe in him without seeing him. Blessed, he said, will they be. This blessing is for you and for me. For nobody alive today has ever seen Jesus. Nobody can see him now. Yet we may believe in him. Patriots, prophets, apostles have told us all we need to know about him. They have made him so real that we can feel him close by us, closer than breathing, nearer than feet and hands. But best of all, we have the word of Thomas, the man who doubted so much and then believed with all his heart. His story is written in the Bible so that you and I, not seeing, but believing, might fall on our knees before our beloved Jesus, saying, My Lord and my God. By this time, the Passover ceremonies were ended for another year. Thousands of people were streaming out of Jerusalem, eager to get back to their homes. All were chattering excitedly. Never had they had so much to talk about. Though the priests and the rabbis had hoped to get rid of Jesus of Nazareth by crucifying him, his name was now on everybody's lips. Some talked about the way he had overturned the tables of the money changers in the temple. Others about his trial and the grim procession to Calvary. Others of the darkness at the cross and his last loud cry of agony. But the story that gripped all hearts was the one about the empty tomb. Here was the mystery of the First Order who had taken his body. Priests, the rabbis, soldiers, disciples, what had been done with it and why? While everybody was arguing this way and that, the rumor flew along every highway out of Jerusalem that Jesus wasn't dead after all. He had actually walked out of his own tomb at the time of the great earthquake. Was the rumor true? Nobody could say. But on and on it went, the most exciting rumor in 1,000 years. As for the disciples, they were glad to be going back to Galilee, and they couldn't get there fast enough. Had not Jesus told them that he would meet them there? 7 of them walked the whole way together, Peter, James, John, Thomas, Nathanael, and 2 others. All were pleased to be leaving the memories of Jerusalem behind them. It was terribly lonesome without Jesus. The last time they had traveled this road, not many days ago, he had been with them, their leader, their teacher, their friend. Now they were on their own. By this time, of course, they were quite sure he had risen from the dead. But they wished he might have been one of their little company, talking with them as of old. On their journey, they passed many a place that reminded them of him. Every now and then, one of them would say, This is where he healed a leper. This is where he gave a blind man sight. Or it was here he told us that he came not to destroy men's lives, but to save them. When they reached Cana of Galilee, a whole flood of memories crowded into their minds. For it was in this village that he had performed his first miracle at the marriage feast. By and by they came to the brow of a hill, from which they could see the lake they loved so dearly. It was beautiful as ever, so calm, peaceful, quite unchanged by all that had happened. Eagerly they hurried down the long last hill, then on to Capernaum. How wonderful it was to be home once more. Now their minds turned to the question of what to do next. Peter settled it for them all. I'm going fishing. We'll go with you, said the others. So they found their way to the old wharf, and there to their joy were the old dear boats just as they had left them. What a thrill they got looking them over, bailing out the water, finding the oars and getting the nets ready. Those boats were so tempting that the 7 disciples could hardly wait to get into one of them again. The Bible says they went forth, entered into a ship immediately. I am sure they did. They couldn't help it. I think I know how they felt. But a sad disappointment awaited the disciples that night. They couldn't catch any fish. Time after time, they threw out their nets and hauled them in, only to find them empty. It was very discouraging, especially as they badly needed the money that a good haul would bring them. I wouldn't be surprised if they said to one another, We've forgotten how to do it. We've lost all our skill all those months we've been away. The stars come out and still there were no fish. Midnight passed, their nets were yet empty. Dawn began to break, and there was nothing to show for their night's toil. As the morning light grew brighter, they noticed a man standing on the shore. Who could that be standing there at this time of the morning, one asked. Can't tell, said the others. Seems to be a stranger in these parts. Then, to their surprise, the stranger spoke to them, his voice carrying clearly across the 100 yards or so of water that separated them. Children, have you any fish? He called. No, they said sadly. Then, to their amazement, the stranger said, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. Should they or shouldn't they? How could this stranger know where the fish were to be found? So near the shore, too. Who did he think he was telling them? Had they not toiled all night and caught nothing? But the stranger's voice was so friendly they couldn't take offense. After all, he might know something. They could try, so they cast the net overboard once more. Barely had it sunk below the surface when something began to happen. Streaks of silver flashed out of the water, gleaming in the sunlight. Fish! Cried Peter. Fish! Cried John. Fish! Cried all the rest as they almost tipped the boat over in their eagerness to see the welcome sight. The old excitement was back again. Pull on the rope! Shouted Peter. It won't come in, said Thomas. The net's too full. And so it was. They were not able to haul it in for the quantity of fish. Now John looked towards the land. The stranger was still there. He was smiling at them, and there was something about the smile that John recognized. It is the Lord, he whispered to Peter. Peter took one look and saw it was true. That's it for today. We'll read about breakfast in Galilee tomorrow. Now, are you boys and girls all obeying your moms and dad? That's honoring them. That's part of the Ten Commandments. Are you taking your vitamins and exercising? Are you reading your Bible? Are you being helpful to your little brothers and sisters? Are you washing your teeth every night like you should? Okay, kids, that's it for today. Love you. Bye.
Hello, this is Attorney Jason Brown. Are you aware that the rural area lost to development between 1982 and 1997 is about equal to the entire landmass of Maine and New Hampshire combined? Are you aware that the rate of rural land loss to development in the 1990s was about 2.2 million acres per year? If this rate continues to the year 2050, when today's white tallers are middle age, the United States will have lost an additional 110 million acres of rural countryside. That's about equal to the combined areas of Connecticut, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Vermont, Delaware, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Virginia. If you think we have problems with immigration now, what do you think our children will have to face in 2050? Get involved and let's fight to protect our white heritage and culture. Go to KKK.com because we care.
Join Canadian Association for Freedom of Expression Director Paul Fromm for Walking on the Fighting Side of Me. That's The Fighting Side of Me with Canadian Association of Freedom of Expression, Paul Fromm, only on KKKRadio.com.
You brought your precious baby home and have done everything you can to give her the best care possible. Is she healthy? Does she get plenty of hugs and kisses? You know how important it is, but it doesn't stop when she turns 18. She is in the global minority. How will you protect her in the future? She'll have an even tougher time protecting her own children. The growing threat against white people is real, and hatred against whites is escalating. Don't forget to prepare your children for the dark days ahead, because it will be the love of thousands of mothers that will rekindle the desire for survival. Our children are too precious. Courageous moms can make the difference between life or death for our people. This message brought to you by the White Women's Perspective.
Lost your white pride? Find it here at KKK Radio, KKK Radio, KKK Radio.